listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
Earlier this month, the High Court ruled that three women forced into prostitution when they were teenagers will no longer have to disclose any convictions related to that activity to potential employers. These women were, in the words of the judge, groomed, pimped, and trafficked, and should not suffer further stigma as a consequence. Jo Moore has written about the case for the UK Human Rights Blog, and she's here to tell us more about it. Jo, what was it that these claimants were challenging in particular?
Well, in simple terms, they were challenging DBS checks, which used to be called CRB checks, which is the regime that checks if you've got any criminal record or convictions or cautions on your record, for example, when you're applying for a job or for a certain position.
Could you give us some of the background to these women's stories?
Yes, it's a very sad background with these three claimants. The first one the court heard was forced into prostitution when she was only 14 years old and she was under a care order. And she had her first conviction, which was for soliciting at the age of 16. Now, all of the ladies' convictions were for loitering and soliciting, which were offences under the Street Offences Act. The second claimant actually waived her right to anonymity, and she's become a campaigner for women who've got these sort of convictions, and also generally a campaigner against sexual exploitation. Now, Fiona Broadfoot, she was the second claimant, was only 15 years old when she was also coerced into sex work. The third claimant, again, was groomed into prostitution still as a teenager, aged only 18. And between the three of them, they had over 100 offences, that's cautions or convictions, mainly under the Street Offences Act. They'd all managed to escape prostitution a long time ago. The most recent conviction amongst them was 1998, but as the court heard, those convictions still carried on having effect on their lives.
So despite the fact that they actually managed to get themselves out of prostitution, they still continued to suffer the effects of these convictions.
Exactly. It was described really well by the second claimant, Mrs. Broadfoot, in an interview that she did last year with BuzzFeed News. She talked about how she couldn't get on a university degree. She wanted to do a social work degree. She couldn't get into child development at college. Now, they said she could get onto the course, but there's no point because she wouldn't be able to find a placement in childcare or in social work because of the criminal record. She also described having been discriminated against in her workplace. Obviously, even once you've got a job, the people who've seen your application have seen these convictions. And she said, I wouldn't even apply for some jobs. And sadly, she wanted to be on the PTA at her son's school, and she had to tell the head teacher. And it was really embarrassing. And she talked about the humiliating effect of having to, so many years down the line, basically relive this exploitation and talk about the convictions in many different walks of life.
And it seems particularly unfair that they were required to disclose spent convictions. Why was this?
Well, that's because of the way that the DBS regime applies to working with children and vulnerable people. So convictions are often spent under the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act 1974. Now, those convictions which are spent, generally they won't show up on a DBS check, or you won't have to show them to your employer. But when you apply for certain positions which involve working with children and working with vulnerable people, even spent convictions have to be disclosed. Now, there was a case called T, in short, which made it to the Supreme Court in 2015, which said that having to disclose old and minor offences that weren't relevant to the position that you're applying for was an unjustified interference with Article 8, that's with your private life. And since those decisions, the law changed a little bit. But that change only benefited people who had just one conviction. So if you had multiple convictions, and as I said earlier, these ladies had 100 between them, all of the convictions have to go in, even if they're old and even if they're not related to the job or the safeguarding aim that the scheme is meant to meet. Now, what might seem even more unfair when you read the judgment, and as I've already expressed, is that these convictions were not only very old, but they came as a result of the women themselves being victims of crime or victimised at a young age.
And of course, as the judge remarked, and which is obvious, women were the ones that were largely caught under this criminal net for soliciting and loitering.
Yes, exactly. They looked at the Street Offences Act, which was what the convictions mainly came from. And The original version of the Act, actually only women could be convicted under it. It was later amended so it could also include men, but they found that the decade after the amendment, 95% of the convictions were women. And this is interesting because, as we might go on to discuss, one of the grounds which they brought challenging the disclosure scheme was that it was unlawfully discriminatory to women.
The other deep unfairness, the double whammy, if you like, is that not only are women disproportionately affected by this particular form of offence, but it often is women who go into jobs where they're working with children. So there's a sort of double effect.
Exactly. This was actually something that the claimants sought to rely on when they made the points about discrimination. Not only is it overwhelmingly women who are convicted under the offences or receive cautions, but they tend to be the ones who work with vulnerable people or children. And they're barred from doing so because of these convictions, which the court eventually found wasn't even linked to the aim it was supposed to be meeting, which was safeguarding those children. They found that, you know, these offences so many years ago, and where the women have completely changed their lives, they're really not relevant to the aim of the scheme.
So apart from the ground that they won on, the claimants challenged the lawfulness of the disclosure scheme on a number of different bases drawn from human rights and European Union law. It was an interesting challenge, wasn't it?
It was interesting, yeah. The ground that they won on, as you've just said, was maybe the classic argument. And we've seen it in a similar case which challenged the multiple convictions rule. That was a Court of Appeal decision of 2017 called P. That case, it is under appeal at the moment, but it found that the multiple convictions rule was an unlawful violation of Article 8. So maybe it wasn't so surprising that the ladies won on that ground, although the court did say they would have found that they'd have succeeded even if they weren't bound by P. But the other grounds were more interesting. They sought to argue, as we've alluded to previously, that the scheme itself was discriminatory, and they relied on Article 14 of the European Convention of Human Rights, read with Article 8, which says that you can't discriminate against people on various grounds, including gender. And they said, because of what we've already discussed, it was almost always women who get convicted for the prostitution-related offences, and more women than men apply for the sort of jobs with children and vulnerable adults where you have to have this enhanced DBS check. It tends to be women who get caught up in the scheme and end up being the victims of it. So it's discriminatory. Well, they didn't win on that one because the court said the disclosure scheme itself doesn't discriminate. Yes, women might have more convictions for loitering and soliciting, but overwhelmingly men have more convictions in general. So they're actually, men are just as or more affected by the need to disclose convictions. The claimants also argued that it was a breach of various European Union and international instruments against trafficking, including an EU directive which says that you shouldn't punish victims of trafficking. Now, the court didn't agree with this either. The law that the claimants were seeking to attack was the disclosure, and the court said that the disclosure of offences itself doesn't show that you've been trafficked because the offences aren't related to being trafficked, they're just related to loitering and soliciting. Now, most interestingly, and perhaps or almost certainly most boldly, they argued that the offence itself of soliciting and loitering was unlawful because the offence was discriminatory. Now, as I've already said, almost always women get convicted of this offence, some 95% after the amendment was made. And they relied on a UN committee recommendation that all legal provisions criminalising women who work in prostitution should be repealed. Effectively, they were saying this law is itself unlawful because it inherently discriminates against women. Now, there was probably plenty of reasons this wasn't going to fly with the court. Firstly, because the provision which they were saying was unlawful wasn't actually the one affecting them. They were convicted under an old version of the law before it was amended. Even if something's later legalised, you can still have a criminal record for committing the offence when it was illegal, as we've seen in relation to certain sexual offences. So it might not have made any difference to the DBS checks anyway. But more importantly, the court was taken by the defendant's strong submissions that it's Parliament and not the court who needs to determine what the criminal law is. There's only very few circumstances in which the court will tell Parliament what the criminal law should be, and the court found this wasn't one of them.
So it was too broad an attack and a challenge in the wrong place, in other words.
A challenge in the wrong place is exactly the way to put it. I think these claimants and the groups that they work with will continue to lobby for the decriminalisation of prostitution in respect of women not being criminalised for working as sex workers or being coerced into prostitution. But they won't challenge it, in my opinion, successfully in the courts so much as they'll do it by lobbying the legislative.
This isn't the end of this particular litigation because the claimants intend to appeal a couple of their points, even though they won on their main ground, didn't they?
Yeah, it seems from news articles published after the judgment came out that they will appeal. I mean, they were, as I said, they were already pretty likely to win on the ground that they did win on because of the precedent that said that multiple convictions were unlawful. So they said that they're going to appeal on the other grounds, so the trafficking and the inherent discriminatory nature of the scheme and possibly even the fact that the offence itself is discriminatory. And these claimants are being supported by campaigning groups who they've been working with, and they'll want to keep that discrimination-based challenge alive. And also attack the fact that soliciting itself is a criminal offence because they say that's unlawful and it discriminates against women unfairly.
What do you think the chances are of them succeeding in this appeal without putting you on the spot?
I think probably for the reasons that the court gave, especially in relation to the last ground, which was them challenging the lawfulness of the offence itself, they're less likely to be successful in court than they would be by campaigning Parliament, basically, to change the law. I think that's the right forum for it, but I don't think there's any reason not to try both sides.
Well, we'll see what happens. Thank you very much for explaining this very interesting case to us. I must say, whenever I see in claimants' arguments the prohibition on slavery under Article 4 of the European Convention of Human Rights come up, I think we live in very strange times that we're having to dust off this provision and use it, even though they weren't successful in this instance.
I know, but I think when you read the summaries of the claimants' evidence, you do see these are women who, not very long ago in this country, were being trafficked and forced to work, and not just forced labour, but forced sex work. It's very sad that these provisions come into effect, but they were engaged in this case. So that was in tandem with the trafficking ground. And I agree, it's unusual to see it, but that's the sad circumstances of this particular case, unfortunately.
Well, it's a reflection of the times. Anyway, I think we've covered the main points. There will probably be more on this. So hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast if the appeal goes ahead.
Yes, I hope so.
Pod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.